Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwen Sheltimer, and our guest this week, novelist and publisher Shane Joseph, who's joined us to talk about his latest novel, Milltown. So, you've said writers run the risk of moralizing. Is this a bad thing? Is this a morality tale? Are you taking a risk?
Well, writers are supposed to show and not tell. They're supposed to paint the picture and not provide ready-made solutions. However, to the extent that the showing can be dramatic, it can also inform the reader to either do this but don't do that. So in a sense, it could be telling. In Milltown, I have attempted to lay bare the ills that can befall a small town. And I end the novel on an optimistic note, with a glimpse of possible ways out for my characters. Whether that amounts to becoming a morality tale, or whether I am moralizing, I guess it's up to the reader to decide.
So tell us how this book then fits into your evolving body of work.
Right, so this is my eighth book. I have written my share of immigrant novels. I've had about three of those done. I've written many short stories that are set all over the world. And so these earlier works represent my origins, where I came from, and the life I kind of once lived as a business professional who was traveling around internationally quite extensively. I even wrote a science fiction book called After the Flood that was set in a future North America. But again, I did that because I could take creative license with the setting, right? Nobody knew what was out in the future, so I could make up my own future. Milltown is different because it's set in contemporary Canada. So you could say it is my bridge into contemporary mainstream Canadian society. I've left the immigrant world behind. I've left the international world behind. I've now descending into what is home today. In order to actually represent that, one of my characters is a Sri Lankan immigrant trying to get a toehold in this otherwise wasp town and try to integrate. Both he and the town's inhabitants have to learn how to accommodate each other because they are different. I have gone on to write several other unpublished novels and stories since Milltown was written, and they all now reside in mainstream Canadian society. So you could say that Milltown was my coming out of the ghetto novel, if you call it that way.
Well, it sounds as though it's filled with excitement.
Well, that's the intention. That is certainly the intention.
So tell us about Blue Denim Press at the present moment. I know it's important to you, so tell us why you think its role is so crucial.
Well, I think that small presses are playing a very valuable role in literature today. The publishing world has polarized between the big five and the myriad of self-published authors on the other side. There are the middle tier of publishing has pretty much been decimated. So the small publishers and the independent publishers who are able to use innovative technology or distribution models are filling the gap that was once played by these mid-tier houses. And so Blue Denim Press is probably never going to be a big five. I can dream about it, but it's not going to happen. But it's a small press, and I started it because I was having really difficulty dealing with other small presses who were publishing my work. You know, they would go out of business, they would take years to respond, and sometimes they would never respond. Or they just had no capacity to accept my work. So I said I needed to have a conduit to be able to get my work out. And once I figured that out, I figured, okay, then now I can also bring other authors to the market. So I can do that secondary role of not only bringing my work out, but bringing other authors' work out as well. And I was told once by a very famous personality in the Canadian literary firmament, when he understood what I was doing, he said, there should be 100 of you, not just yourself. There should be hundreds of you doing this, because that's how you will restore the middle class to Canadian publishing. So I was quite heartened by that, and I'm continuing to do that. I published three, I hope to do four books this year, one of mine and three others. I'm getting really good manuscripts coming my way because I'm understanding that a lot of the established authors of a bygone day have not been let go by their publishers, right? And so they are seeking places to go to. There's a lot of emerging authors looking for places to go to. There's a lot of content. Challenge is to find readers. So I'm doing my little bit, and I know that the authors that I select also do their bit, because the foremost salesperson today is the author. And the author gets out there, and the author has their following, and that's how they get books into people's hands. So I think it's a good thing to do. I hope I can do it for many years into the future.
So please read to us some more from Milltown.
Sure. Now, in the first section, I read one voice, which is the immigrant voice. Now I'm going to read somebody homegrown, a woman by the name of Sue. She's a widow, a single mom, works in the town municipality building, an assistant to the mayor. But she's also facing the challenge of sexual harassment in the workplace, and she's pining for a lost love. And all this happens on her walk home. So, Sue took the long route home after work that day. The sun had gone down, and the wind had picked up off the lake. She needed exercise to rid her head of her stress, and she gritted her teeth against the wind and strode fast to increase her heart rate. She knew the route and could follow it with her mind on other things. She cut through a side street off the town hall that took her down to the water. From there, she would head east along the boardwalk, past the town limits, then up the hill, past the lakeside houses, before cutting inland again, crossing the railway tracks, and arriving at her semi-detached bungalow. 30 minutes of fast walking, a good substitute for the absence of sex, she figured. The sex bit bothered her. Ever since the night Frank Morgan had given her, his new secretary, a ride home from the office Christmas party, driven her onto the pier instead, parked a distance from some of the other misted over cars where teenagers were making out, put his hand on her thigh, and told her what a miserable marriage he had. She had considered the job as personal assistant a promotion, a way out of the town's administrative office and into the inner sanctum of municipal power, another step in her mission. But when the mayor's cold and tentative hands gripped her leg that night, 2 weeks into the job, she realized it came with obligations beyond the call of duty. "Don't you get lonely, Sue?" Frank had asked, "with Bob gone and all?" She looked helplessly out of the misting window, the outside world going opaque with their steamed, alcohol-laced breath. "Sometimes." She wondered how it would feel the morning after if she just let him go all the way with her. Something in her Catholic upbringing held her back. She wanted to open the car door and run. Then she thought of Billy and of her role as sole breadwinner and of her mission. Was it a mission? Or simple revenge? Dwelling on it gave her a headache. She just preferred to set a course and follow it through to the end. "It's the same with me," Frank was mumbling. "I'll be discreet." She felt his hand move up her leg. She stopped his groping ice-cold fingers. "No, Frank, not like this. We've both had too much to drink." A car in front started its engines and roared past, back towards the town, its headlights sweeping the mayor's car. Despite the thickly misted windscreen, Frank ducked instinctively. That broke the spell. "Take me home, Frank," Sue pleaded. Frank reluctantly started the car. "You'll give some consideration to what I said." After a brief silence, she replied, almost in a whisper, "Yes." "And I'll be discreet," he repeated as he dropped her off at home. "Good night." That had been nearly 3 months ago. Frank's entreaties and invitations had started to ramp up from there. First, there had been invitations to go into Toronto for the weekend, which she put off because she had a good excuse. Her local curling team was in a tournament that ran on the weekends, and her absence would be noticed. The invitations switched over to her cottage on the Quarthas, normally unoccupied in the winter. She had turned down those too. When he began to get snappy and curt with her, she let him pet her heavily in the office one day when they had both been working late. The janitors coming in had short-circuited their horseplay before she got too hot. This was her way of keeping him warm but not boiling him over. Now she occasionally repeated this therapy like she had done today, to keep his libido high and interest piqued. But she knew it was only going to be a matter of time before he wanted more. Today's gift of the letter confirmed to her that the promise she had made to her dying Bob could and must be delivered swiftly. All was not well in Milltown. Beneath the veneer of small-town Canada and Milltown's reputation as one of the best little towns to live in, if one could believe the tourist brochures, that is, there was a cancer spreading, taking the town's stoic hearts away in their prime, like it did Bob. Her footsteps slowed as she crested the hill. Large crumbling houses from the 1800s sat in laid-back lots in this part of Milltown. The landed gentry, the merchants, and the transplants from Toronto, who had either inherited or snatched up these properties during the last recession. She could not dream of buying one of these places now. Perhaps if Bob had been alive, there may have been that possibility, but not now. She walked past number 80. That was one house she was familiar visiting, especially when Brenda was alive. And she wouldn't mind its present occupant's hands wandering around her body in lieu of Frank's. Just the thought of Rick still gave her goosebumps. The old Rick, not the sad soul who currently resided inside his still athletic but rapidly emaciating body. Dogs barked as she went past, those ferocious Great Danes, Beelzebub and Mephistopheles, Bill and Phil, as they were affectionately known. They must be aging too, or they must be the second iteration of those majestic dogs. Rick used to strike a commanding figure when he strode down Main Street on Sunday evenings in his black sweater and pants with those two black monsters on either side. He reminded Sue of an avenging charioteer in an old Cecil B. DeMille movie. The strumming of a guitar wafted to her ears as she stopped by the gate and looked for signs of life inside the house. A silhouette of a man framed itself behind a blind on the ground floor, shaggy long hair, cigarette dangling from the mouth. The guitar wailed a sad song, accompanied by the dogs with their barking. A "shut up" rang firmly, and the dogs were silenced. The guitar player rose, setting the instrument aside, and the light went out in the room.
Well, thank you, Shane. Many thanks
for
telling us about your new novel, Milltown. We'll be waiting for it to come out. When is it going to come out?
Well, it's going to come out in April, and I think I'm going to have a launch in Coburg in the middle of April.
Okay. And where can listeners buy your other books?
Oh, you can buy them on Amazon.com, in any bookshop where good books can be bought. The bookshop in town here, Let's Talk Books, they have all my books. So, yeah, go ahead and ask for them.
Okay. And to connect with Gwen and me, please send comments on the program, queries or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these shows are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Do write to us. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program on Northumberland 89.7. Truly local radio.